All right, today is February 11th, 2013. This is the first interview with Ted Tibbetts. We're here at his home in Madison. I guess this is Madison, right?
It certainly is. West side of Madison.
West side of Madison. And my name is Troy Reeves. I'm with the UW-Madison Oral History Program. Ted, for sound quality purposes, could you state your name first and last and then spell your last name?
Ted Tibbetts. T-I-B-B-I-T-T-S.
Great. I think it's going to pick you up just fine. Ted, I sent you an overview of what we might talk about today, primarily your early years. But I want to start off with asking if you want to tell the story about how you ended up matriculating at UW as an undergraduate.
Okay. It goes back to being raised on a farm near between Galesville and Black River Falls off of Highway 54. I lived on the farm but did not have to do the work of farming because the farm was rented. My dad worked in a county office.
All right, so raised on a farm, but you didn't work the farm.
Didn't work the farm, but as helped out at times summer, but rarely milked any cows. But nonetheless, this got me into agriculture in high school, and then as I looked to college, agriculture was a logical spot to get into. Plus the fact that my mother had grown up in Madison and knew about a cooperative ag house called Babcock House on Lake Street, in which you could live and work for your board and room. And we basically hired a cook, and so there were essentially no costs. This was the old home of Stephen Moulton Babcock, the biochemist that developed the butterfat test for cows. Thus, I was automatically in agriculture, and I went through my first few years not sure what I wanted to major in, but by junior year I decided to major in agronomy. A plant science, working with field crops, and worked then with during my last summer, and the summer after I graduated with a professor in agronomy, Ken Buchholz, and he was responsible for weed control work in the agronomy department. He in turn knew Whitey Holm in horticulture, and Whitey was looking for a graduate student to work in weed control in horticulture. This led me to a graduate assistantship in the Department of Horticulture. And at the same time, these were years where you were still eligible for the draft, but you were exempted as long as you stayed in school. And so I worked pretty diligently to stay in school and get my work completed before they put too much pressure on me, and thus did my master's and PhD work in 3 years in under Whitey Holm in horticulture, graduating in 1953.
And that was in 53 you graduated with PhD?
Or? PhD in horticulture and botany, with a minor in botany.
So if I may back up a little bit, so you said your mom grew up in Madison?
Yes.
So did you have family in Madison?
Yes, then? I had two aunts in Madison that watched over me a little bit, but...
So had you been to Madison previous to matriculating at UW?
Oh, yes, many times, visiting family, generally at Christmas time. So I knew a little about Madison, but not very much.
Okay. So you'd been there a few times. But what was your initial impression or your initial thoughts as you started matriculating there and going to school and living there day to day?
Well, the interesting thing was to get into a organized cooperative house which had a group of 30 people and 30 men living there, many of them veterans, because this was 1946 to 50, and all the fun of interacting with them over the years and the parties that were organized in the house, which was very significant in making a fun time of college.
Now, were they, since they were, some of them were World War II vets, were most of them then older, a little bit older than you?
About half of them were World War II vets. Okay. As a result, I never bought a textbook during my undergraduate years because the veterans would get free textbooks, and they were very willing to let someone use them when they were done with them, and so I sponged off of them. Hmm. I spent the 4 years living and eating at Babcock House, but then as a graduate student, I moved a few doors away into a private rooming house and then still kept eating at Babcock House during my graduate work and enjoying the social activities of that group. This was also fairly close within two blocks of the Presbyterian Student Center, and I became very active in the Student Center and was a deacon in the Presbyterian Student Center during my later years of college.
I have to admit I don't know this. Is the Babcock House, is it still extant on Lake Street? Or is it...
No, the property then... was taken over by the university, and an extension building was built on the property. The property is between Lake Street and, I mean, on Lake Street between Langdon and State Street.
Mm-hmm. You said you had a lot of fun in this cooperative house. Did you attend athletic events, anything like that, while you were...
Oh, yes. We attended all of the basketball and football, and the house worked to get tickets in the block. We actually used the old armory as our showering place because our small little house had no showers. Had one little bathtub, but you never dared get in it for fear that somebody would throw some cold water on you. And so we used the armory, and it also provided a way of getting free towels. You could take your dirty, we used university towels, and we'd swap off towels. As a consequence, I actually worked my way through, paid for all of my way through college, through summer work. I delivered daily cardinals early in the morning, and often had some job in agronomy, and I remember staying up all night and watching a seed dryer's work in the seeds building and studying, and I could nap a little.
So were your summers in undergrad spent in Madison?
Not my first three, but after that, my senior year and on, and then the graduate work, of course, was 12 months. But two of the summers were spent in Madison. Another thing that led me into weed control was that while I was still living on the farm, and about my senior year, my dad encouraged us to get into custom spraying to make money during the summer. And I had two other brothers, and we had two custom spraying rigs that we went around spraying weeds, primarily Canadian thistles, with 2,4-D, and spraying DDT in barns and fairgrounds to kill flies. We would come home from those DDT sprayings coated with DDT, and yet I've never had any ill effects from it that I know.
Mm-hmm. So during your first three summers, you'd go back home and work?
You work doing the spraying operations with my brothers. These were on some old vehicles, a 1919 Model T and a 1929 Chevrolet truck. And many problems of blowing out tires and problems on the road, but we learned to fix them, most of them.
So the spraying device was attached to the those two vehicles?
To the vehicles, yeah. In the case of the 2,4-D spray, it was a sprayer attached to the vehicle.
The squeaking you heard was the dog was dog had a chew toy, a squeaky toy. Were the friends from the house? Were the friends you made in classes? What are some of you see the friendships that you made?
Well, many of them were from the house, and over the years I've maintained a. We still have a group that gets together every homecoming game of. After the homecoming game of friends that were at Babcock House. The numbers are decreasing at this time.
That's pretty good, though, be able to do that every year.
Yes. Now, what that custom spraying then led into what I ended up doing in my graduate study was working on weed control in vegetable crops, and particularly table beets. But certainly a lot of my interest and was predicated on this work that I initiated in at home on the farm.
So did you know... once you move from undergraduate to graduate, and that sounds like that was a pretty, I mean, were you in, did you graduate in May and start graduate school in
I started
in the
graduate
summer?
School immediately, yes.
Okay.
If I had a gap, I might have ended up in the service.
Right. Well, that's the time of the Korean War, too, right?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
So. So you knew, so Whitey and I forgot his last
Whitey
name.
Whitey Holm.
Holm?
H-O-L-M.
H-O-L-M, okay. So he was looking for a graduate student. Was he looking for a graduate student to do weed control? Is that?
Yes.
Okay.
And it was a project. He had money from the table beet growers to work on weed control in table beets and had money to fund a graduate student, and he hired me to do this work. And so we worked on the problem with the growers to find effective chemicals. And then the chemical itself was trichloroacetic acid, and my thesis was built around recovering trichloroacetic acid and developing a method to recover it from plants and analyze for the residual amounts that were left in the plants.
So specifically from the beets that you were
spraying? Yeah, from beet leaves, yes.
Mm-hmm. What part of the state, or was it in the state where beets were grown? Where were you doing this work?
Most of the beets were grown on organic soils in southeastern Wisconsin and up towards central Wisconsin on the organic farms. And some of it was also on silt loam soils, on highland soils. There's still some canning industry, but not as much. There was, I think, around 5,000 acres of it at that time.
So were you doing coursework during the school year and then research in the summer? Is that for graduate school to do this, to the weed spraying on beets?
Yeah, you do the field. We did field research in the summertime, but much of my... thesis work was year-round. While you're as a graduate student, you're doing some studies, but you're taking some research credits too. So you're doing a lot of work on your thesis problem, especially in your latter half of your graduate work.
Mm-hmm. So you worked directly under Whitey Holm?
Yes.
Were there other professors that you took classes from? And...
Oh, yes, yes. I was taking courses in botany, soils, bacteriology, quite a bit of chemistry, biochemistry, organic chemistry, biochemistry.
So most of your classes then were, I'm guessing, were in the what's called the ag part of campus?
Yeah, in the Cals, okay. Except for the botany, but all the biochemistry and organic chemistry was in letters and science.
Okay. So for my graduate work, the thesis led to a master's degree. Is the thesis what got you the PhD?
Yes, there was I did take a master's degree and wrote up, I think, some of the field research work with the trichloroacetic acid on the table beets for the master's thesis. And then the PhD thesis was the study of recovering the trichloroacetic acid from plant tissue and developing procedures to do it, because there was no methods known until I developed some procedures.
Okay. So part of your work in graduate school was, your research work was on the wheat sprain of beets, and you were able to use some of that for your master's and then also for your thesis.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. It involved quite a bit of travel, of actually going out and making applications of different herbicides on table beets in farmer fields. And so you got to know the beet farmers and had a nice association with them, and they appreciated what you were doing, and you reported back to those people.
So over the course of the 3 years, did you do work in the same fields and get to meet the same farmer sort of over and over again over the...
Generally, yes.
Okay.
But it would be three or four different farmers that we would have worked in their fields. Plus some plots that we had down in the, what was called the marsh, which is where the... picnic, just west of Picnic Point. This area has been set up as recreational ball fields.
Okay.
Now at the present.
So is that sort of near the Biotron?
Beyond the Biotron.
Beyond the Biotron?
Yes.
Okay. And
further out, close to Picnic Point, west of Picnic Point.
Okay. And so as you were going to school and getting these advanced degrees, what did you think your future was going to hold? What sort of occupation or job were you looking at?
Didn't really know. Looked at, there's some industries, and trichloroacetic acid was produced by the Dow Chemical Company, and so we had contact with them and talked to them, and I met with them as I was finishing my work. But my problem was that I had to go into service as soon as I finished my work, because the draft was calling.
So because you had been able to defer because you were in school, once you were out of school,
you were eligible for the draft. And I got my degree in June, and I was I was in the service in September. And I went in, I allowed them to draft me to go into the Army, because rather than to go into officer's training, because if you went in as a non-commissioned person, you could get in and get out in 2 years, where if you took a commission, you had to sign up for 3 years. Also, there was a fellow that was at the University of Wisconsin in plant pathology that had worked at a place called Camp Dietrich out in Maryland that did biological warfare. And they had passed word back that if any people were going in the service that had training in with plants and biochemistry, they would be interested in them. And so it was all set up that I would go through basic training and be transferred to Camp Dietrich, and that looked to be a nice way to spend your service time at a in Maryland. However, it all fell through because of some situations of where they were looking at selling out the or using a private company to run Camp Dietrich. As a consequence, I got into the artillery, trained in artillery for 8 weeks, and then orders to go to Germany, and that came about very quickly without much that I could do about it. However, in Germany, the assignment section looked with sympathy upon having a PhD going into artillery, and they transferred me or assigned me to an intelligence detachment in Heidelberg, near Heidelberg, which was set up to, and my work was set up to look at old German soil maps and transfer these over to engineering maps. This was very interesting work because it meant traveling around Germany to look at a lot of different soils whenever we could find an excuse. Plus, I was able to travel with a German geologist that knew the countryside. So I spent 16 months in service and managed to get an early release to take a job back at the University of Wisconsin in the horticulture department. Taking a job back in the department you graduated from has some disadvantages because you don't make very many professional contacts that you would if you take a job at some other location. However, the promise of getting out early of the service pushed me in that direction, and so I spent only 20 months of service time and was able to get an early release to come back to the University of Wisconsin.
So when you were traveling with that, did you say he was an engineer, a German...
Geologist.
German geologist, excuse me. Mm-hmm. Were you able to see the... I mean, even then, that's...
This was 1955.
Like, right, so about 10 years after the war. Were you still able to see some of the physical effects of World War II?
Primarily, we saw effects along the Maginot Line, the fortifications between France and Germany. But within Germany, didn't see much of the effects of the war. And also didn't find any resentment of German people toward Americans. You felt comfortable. You didn't. There was no problems of traveling around. And this German geologist liked to go down into the German Alps to study soils where, where it was very pretty.
So I'm getting from what you were saying that you weren't particularly interested in being in the service any longer than you had to?
That was right. It came out as a corporal, and that was as far as I wanted to go. I had much more love for research in plant science than serving in the Army.
So when did the, I guess how did you find out, being in the military, how did you find out about the job, the availability of the job at UW?
I was in contact constantly with Whitey Holm, my professor Holm, over some papers that we were writing from my research. And so they knew where I was and knew me and... respected the kind of research that I had been undertaking and invited me to come back.
So was there any sort of application process or competition for the job?
There apparently was not any particular competition. There was a person moved from horticulture to plant pathology, and it was a tobacco position. Doing research with tobacco. They wanted somebody to study some problems in tobacco, but more importantly, they were interested in having this position slowly move over into vegetable crops, and that is what interested me, and to work particularly with head lettuce, a developing industry in the state.
What, when did you move back then, and when did you start at UW?
I came out of the service in June and started in July, and I took the job immediately. That was the justification for the early release, was that they needed someone to fill a position immediately.
So that's July of 55?
July of 55.
And it's not a lot of time between getting your PhD and starting, but did you notice any changes on campus or in Madison from the time you left to when you came back?
Not much change in Madison, but professionally it was not good because I had nearly a 2-year gap in following the research, new research findings in areas of plant science, plant physiology. That was a big disadvantage, and it took a while to catch up back on this. But not much changes at Madison over that short period in 55.
Okay. Being a professor, I assume, is being different than a graduate student. So where did you live? What sort of place did you look for when you came back?
I had made arrangements with a person that was on the staff, a person that had been in Babcock House and had been hired back. He'd gotten his PhD and was working in the agronomy department. And he invited me to stay in there with them on Breeze Terrace, near Breeze Terrace. But this fell through, and I ended up then staying with my brother on Langdon Street for a few months until I found more permanent housing. But this was a nice experience, for I met my wife at this working with my, staying with my brother, and he introduced me to this lady that I married.
Okay. So, is it one of the houses that's still extant on Langdon Street?
It was just a rooming house
that he was
staying in on the upper part of Langdon Street.
Okay.
But I did stay there until I got married 6 months later.
6 months, that's a pretty quick
It was a pretty quick courtship.
So how exactly did you meet your wife?
Through waiting on tables at her rooming house at the sorority she belonged to.
So you were having a meal there, and she was...
No, I was subbing for my brother one time, and taking the opportunity to meet some ladies, and not really interested in waiting on table that much as it was to meet some ladies. Ladies.
Because you were faculty, right?
Yes. So I was faculty. I didn't wait on tables very much, but enough to meet a lady.
Okay. So it was a means to an end.
Right.
Okay. It's a few questions I want to ask about your early years on faculty, but I want to make sure... sort of step back here for a second. Is there anything in the early years, so pre-1955, that you feel important to get on the record?
I don't think there's much else in what I've told you. Oh, one goes way back to high school. I went to Galesville High School, and there was an ag teacher there that worked very closely with the students. And as a consequence, became very active in Future Farmers of America and raised a calf that I took over from our farm, then bought some sheep and raised sheep. I raised capons. and was involved in actually castrating these capons with this ag teacher. His name was Beadle, J.O. Beadle. And traveled, went to many county fairs, went to the state fair to show animals, which broadened a lot my interest in agriculture.
Did you show one of the animals at the state fair?
Yes, I showed a sheep at the state fair. Didn't win any prizes. A Southdown sheep.
Was that was the state fair located near Milwaukee like it
yes.
is today?
It is okay. Same location.
Same location.
Same location okay. as today. Right. Also in high school, I got into the public speaking contest, and there was a... again, a agriculture speaking contest, and you competed, and I actually won the state FFA speaking contest. And the subject was on dairy plant conversion of dairy plants joining together and becoming dairy plants, yes, joining together for economies. Went on to an interstate contest, but did not win that.
Where was that at?
The interstate contest was at Purdue University at Lafayette, Indiana.
Now, had you traveled outside the state at all before that opportunity?
Not very much. Traveled a lot within the state, but not outside of the state, that's right.
But I guess, from what I know, West Lafayette isn't, you know, like a big city like Indianapolis or... Okay.
But there's a little more to my beginning, which I didn't bring out, was the fact that I went to a one-room schoolhouse for most of my primary school, first 8 grades. This had only 16 students. It was a quarter mile from our house, and we walked there and walked back. But it was a good experience. And yet you sat in classes and you could hear what was going on in the class ahead of you. So often you picked up a significant amount of information in math and science or history gave you some extra education that you wouldn't get if you were in a single classroom.
Right.
And I don't regret the education that I had through that.
Mm-hmm. Were you said you had 2 other brothers?
Yes. One in nearly 2 years older and one a year younger.
Okay. But at one point then, at least for a couple years, all 3 of you were in the same...
All 3 of us were in the same Wilson Creek school.
So that's Wilson Creek?
Yes.
And then I didn't get the name of the high school.
Galesville.
Galesville?
Galesville. Galesville.
Okay.
It was 14 miles away, and we had to ride our bikes or walk a mile to catch the bus. And then it was a good hour and a half to school, because they went up different valleys to pick up people.
Mm-hmm. So quite a difference from year 1 through 8.
Grade school, it
right.
certainly was.
Quarter mile there and back to 14 miles. That's great. Thank you for all that. One more thing. The instructor's name in high school, Beadle?
Beadle. B-E-A-D-L-E.
Okay.
Joe Beadle. Really took an interest in his students and spent all his life with them. Made a big mark on me.
So when you got your faculty appointment, if I remember correctly, it wasn't there wasn't any teaching involved in it?
No, there was no teaching. The first work was with tobacco research, primarily directed toward trying to improve the burn of tobacco, because the tobacco in Wisconsin is used for cigar binders in cigars. And it needs, if it doesn't burn well, it'd keep a spark in it, it would go out. And so the problem was to study what you could do to fertilize the plants to improve that burn. But then I became very interested in trying to develop procedures of direct seeding tobacco as against using planting, having transplant beds and transplanting plants into the field. This never came to fruition, but I spent a lot of time on that. But very quickly, as when opportunity arose, within about 4 years, I started working on vegetable crops, and particularly head lettuce. There was a quite a large head lettuce growing in Wisconsin, nearly 5,000 acres in the 50s and 60s. And they had a lot of problems because the summers would get a little too warm and they would get some breakdown inside of the heads, and they would also start to send up a seed stalk rather than making a firm head. So I found that a most interesting, intriguing plant to study. This, again, was on all on organic farms in mostly north of Madison between Portage and Berlin, Wisconsin.
And where are the tobacco farms in Wisconsin?
Tobacco farms, there's two centers of tobacco industry. One is south of Madison around Edgerton and Stoughton, and the other growing area is up around Varroca in Reedsburg. Part of my work with tobacco is also maintaining a certified seed program to ensure that tobacco seed was free of diseases. And I was responsible for the certified seed program in Wisconsin.
Now, Ted, did you publish on some of your tobacco stuff?
There's just a couple publications on tobacco, not very much. Interest that I got into, being a weed control person, was the idea of spraying tobacco with a chemical to stop the suckers, as they called them, the branches from forming. The tobacco plants grew up, they took the top off the tobacco, and then let it grow for another 3 to 4 weeks before they would harvest it. But during that period, little branches would form in the axils of the leaves, and those would have to be removed before the rest of the tobacco plant was harvested, and they did that by hand. And I worked with a chemical called maleic hydroxide, which effectively stopped those branches from forming, and it eliminated this labor. However, there was then the question, did it affect the quality of the tobacco? And so we worked with the tobacco industry to look carefully at the tobacco that was came from plants that were harvested after maleic hydroxide was applied. I published a paper on that.
Okay. And so what?
And some papers on burn, techniques of burn.
So did the herbicide affect the quality?
No, and it became a common practice to use this chemical. You wouldn't call it a herbicide because that infers weed control. But you just have to call it, it became a chemical application.
So you just applied a chemical is what you would call it.
Okay. Yes.
So the job started in tobacco, but it was known. Was it known to you when you got it that you were going to segue into something else?
Yes, that I'd work on over into vegetable crop.
So did you know when you got the job about how long it would be until you were going to move from tobacco into vegetables?
No, I didn't know exactly, but with the understanding that it would happen within a few years. And particularly as I solved some of the problems with the industry for the burn problem.
Did you enjoy working in tobacco with?
I enjoy research of any kind.
Okay.
And I enjoyed working with some of the tobacco industry, and it was kind of a disappointment. More the tobacco researchers around the country in Pennsylvania, where they were working on the same kind of tobacco. It was a disappointment to leave them because I'd made some contacts as I started work, then moved over into lettuce work.
Now, Ted, was any of this work in tobacco, was it working in the Biotron at that point?
No. Okay. The Biotron was not operational at that time. No, and I did not, not any real controlled environment work with the tobacco.
Okay. When do we start to see that controlled environment work? Is that with the lettuce?
As soon as I started working on lettuce, okay. Because one of the major problems they had was a breakdown inside of the head that they called tip burn. And that became my major focus.
Tip burn?
Tip burn.
And what is that?
And it was a breakdown of the in the way inside the center small leaflets in the head. And we found that it was a deficiency of calcium. And showed that the leaves inside of the head got very little calcium. And if they grew too fast, they became deficient and had this breakdown. And even though you applied calcium to the root system, excess calcium, it didn't help the problem. You needed a reasonable amount. We did find in our work that high humidity at night would encourage calcium movements to the inner leaves. And so moist nights favored it. Hmm. And we showed with other plants, cabbage, and we were able to reproduce a similar injury in cabbage. And control it with high humidity.
How long? So, once you started in lettuce, you immediately then started working in controlled environments?
Essentially, I had the need for it, yes. I very early purchased a small controlled environment chamber. And then started working, I think my first years in the Biotron were about 1965.
Okay.
When the Biotron was operational.
So it was nearly a decade, or roughly a decade into your faculty appointment before Biotron. Okay.
But very quickly I found, as I worked in controlled, it started working in these controlled chambers that we had, difficulties of measuring what you had and in different parts of the chamber and at different times when you were working around the chambers. And one of the big ones I found was that people breathing carbon dioxide around a chamber would increase the carbon, especially if you open the door, you increase the carbon dioxide level, and that made the plants grow faster. Mm-hmm. And even working on the outside of the chamber, because the chambers tended to exchange some air with outside the chamber, if you worked around it a lot, you increased the growth of the plants and changed the rate of the growth of the plants, mm-hmm. and it was hard to replicate studies. My first chambers that I ordered in 1965, I ordered from a chemical company called Shure Gillette over in Michigan, and I asked for no more than 1% air exchange per hour, and they said they could do this. And I questioned it, and they said, oh, we've been working with some pollution chambers, and we can do it. The chambers came, and I tested them by putting a carbon dioxide level inside and then walking away from the chambers and watching the rate at which the carbon dioxide decreased inside the chamber. And I found there was 30% air exchange in 5 minutes in these chambers that were supposed to be 1% per hour. I had a lot of trouble with that company and never did pay them the last 10% of the money for their chambers. Mm-hmm. But as a consequence also, I never had chambers that I could work with effectively until I was in the Biotron, where I could effectively control carbon dioxide.
So for almost, I think, 5-6 years working in lettuce, working experiments with controlled environments with lettuce, you just weren't satisfied with...
I was not satisfied with all of the results I was mm-hmm. getting.
Mm-hmm. And that was primarily because of the chambers themselves?
The chambers themselves. And part of the problem was the devices for measuring humidity, the device that they had for measuring humidity versus devices that... One of the common ones was sling psychrometer, but it was very difficult to sling this within a chamber. And this led on then to my having a workshop at a growth at a national horticulture meeting, a workshop on controlled environments and their control. And had a group of people that had some of the similar kinds of problems that I had, but it led to a very active group of researchers from all over the country to develop, our thrust was to develop mechanisms for getting repeatability in controlled environment chambers, which meant accurate measurement, accurate controlling devices, accurate watering, and feeding of nutrition to mm-hmm. the plants.
And then this, because we've talked about this when we didn't have the recorder on, this is something that then, if I remember right, you worked on a lot after, sort of, is that once you got in the Biotron, you started trying to get repeatability among various researchers in various locations, or was it just something?
It was working in controlled environments, whether it was in the Biotron of ensuring that what we asked for, even in the Biotron, was what we were getting. And I worked closely with them then, or in the years following years, of helping to encourage procedures that would ensure repeatability.
Okay. Ask a couple of questions here about your personal life, and that may get us close to about an hour. So you had a whirlwind courtship, married. What year were you married?
In 1956.
Okay. When you got married, where did you move to?
Then moved into a university housing, University Heights housing, in the out by Picnic Point, and spent about 1 year there, and then purchased a small home in on Tetford Avenue.
Tetford?
Tepfer, T-O-E-P-F-E-R, in Westmoreland.
Now, during these years through 65, before you started working the Biotron, did you and your wife have children during that?
We had two children. First one in the first year, and then another one 2 years later, a boy and a girl.
Okay. Do you feel you were able to adequately sort of balance your research and your home life during those early years while the kids were young and growing up?
I think so.
Did
a lot of traveling with the research but we also traveled together, and I would go to national meetings, and the wife and the two children would go along, and then I would usually take a week's vacation after or during it, so that we would go and do some interesting sightseeing along with the meeting. But there were many other meetings that would be one or two or three days. Family was not one.
Okay. Now, during this time, through 1965, I know you have a sheet about international travel. There wasn't any international travel at that point, was there yet?
Not much. No, okay. No. Most of my international travel came later.
Okay. And it's actually right after. And part of the reason why I'm sort of holding off to talk about 66 to the present is 66 is when you start doing work for NASA, too. So I want to, I think that's sort of a nice spot to start the next one. So maybe one more thing about this up to 1965. So you worked with tobacco and lettuce. With lettuce, you worked in controlled environments. Was there any other sort of avenue of research that you were working on during those first decade or so as a faculty member here?
Much of it with lettuce, although I did work with weed control on organic farms with any of the crops that were grown on those farms. And some of that jointly with Whitey Holm, who also had a responsibility in this weed control. So I didn't work, only worked with the crops on organic soils.
So a continuation of your... your weed
some
control.
Little of the continuation of the weed control, but not very much.
Okay. And at this point...
I'm kind of...
Blocked. Oh, okay, sorry.
I'm kind of... No, I don't.
Okay. And if you think of anything after I go, you know, if you want to write it down, we can talk about it at the start of
okay.
the next session.
Okay.
Or you can send me an email, whatever. And prior to 1965, were you still 100% research? Did you have any teaching responsibilities during this first decade or so?
Yes. I started just a little. I started helping on a vegetable crop. First teaching was with a vegetable crops course. And taught that for a couple of years.
Okay, 1965.
About that time.
Yeah, so vegetable crop production, 1965. So I think, you know, this is probably a good point to stop. And what we'll do is we'll talk about, you know, 1965, 66, that's when you start teaching. You start your collaboration with NASA. And then also the Biotron, obviously, as well. So I think that's a nice spot to start with next time. I do want to leave you with the last word, though. Is there anything in your head that you...
The part that leads on to that teaching, the reason I did get into teaching, I asked for it. Because I found in that period of 55 to 65, by not teaching, I found you didn't keep up on the ordinary research in plant science. I was concentrating strictly on the research in my problem areas. And so I asked for teaching to just maintain a balance.
Mm-hmm.
And I found it did do this for me.
Okay. And also I think in 1965, at least, I think your resume says you changed from associate professor to, associate. So is that tenure? Is that?
That was tenure.
Okay,
yes.
So you got tenure in 64?
Yes.
Maybe we'll finish with, why don't we finish with that? What do you call the process of tenure?
Tenure really means that the department agrees to keep you on indefinitely. Your salary may not be increased if you don't keep performing, but you will not lose your job. Whereas before tenure, at any point, the department can say to you, we're not satisfied with your performance. Now, the fact that it took 9 years to get an associate professorship was quite a long time, but I think the department recognized the significant shift in research emphasis and the difficulty that it was for me to get publications going, that they gave me some extra leeway and did not drop me before they did promote me finally in 64.
Ted, anything else you want to say about these? What would this be, the first 35, 36 years of your life, something?
Yeah, not that I think of now. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Troy, it's been a pleasure.
You're welcome.
And I hope this keeps
going. We'll meet again soon. So thank you very much for your time. This ends the first interview with Ted Tibbetts.